Next case is 98-424, Columbus Bar Association versus Samuel Pope. Mr. Pope.
Good morning, Your Honors. May I please report? We are here because I made a telephone call to the University Area Rentals. And the rest of the guys are somewhat in dispute. Bar Association seems to hold the idea that I knew of these kind of mediation and specifically the question of Mr. King's deposition or not. Was something that he didn't think I needed to know at the time. And whether or not I actually had an interest in renting to Ms. Cantrell at the time. My position on that is that why else would I have made a call? I stood to gain nothing from making this call, other than to placate Ms. Cantrell's fears and develop a rapport with her to eventually have contact with her in the future when I would be in a position to rent, as I said throughout this entire time. At the time, my rehab project would in its infancy. Everybody knew that. Ms. Cantrell knew it, Mr. King knew it, and I had slated that it would be done a lot earlier. Or failed to mention the fact in its report that I had a testimony of Mr. Brian Bright, who was my architect, who helped me develop plans for rehabbing my space. And he testified to the difficulties that came out of what I wanted to do with the building and what I was allowed to do vis-a-vis the building codes and things like that.
Are you claiming that you did not know that the defendant was planning to file a complaint and replace the call?
No, I did not know.
What reason did he give you? What induced you? What did he say to you to replace the call?
It was Ms. Cantrell. It was a candy, I think was her name. And we were talking about it. She was concerned about what they would say in a referral. As a reference, and she asked me to make a call. I didn't, in my earlier deposition, remember who had asked, because we were all talking about the instance, the difficulties that Ms. Cantrell had had in her previous rental area at University Area Rentals. And I didn't remember that asking, but she testified in front of the board that she had asked the person to make a call. And I believe we decided to proceed because she didn't want to be in the room.
What was your reaction when Pope puts out a complaint, or I'm sorry, the other gentleman puts out a complaint, and starts typing it back to the complainant?
Actually, he was working on the computer during the telephone call in the room. And he had that computer all week, and he was working on the
computer.
Other documents for the one case that we were working on together. We were never fracturing.
We're still going to take it up on
case, which was the
case six or
which was it's required to relocate in this case. It's not the building of all cases, the all-testing case. But it was not out of the ordinary for him to be working in my office. I didn't know bells or whistles went off. In my practice, I had previously contacted the realtor, the Bar Association, with questions concerning ethical activities and conducts and whether or not planned activities of mine would violate such in any of the disciplinary rules. One case comes to mind I called regarding whether or not a person who is a debt finder, they have unclaimed funds, and they go out trying to people whether or not rest at my building. And I put in many long nights there.
The board found that the property you owned was a Spitzer warehouse, which is uninhabitable. This wasn't going to be rented to as apartments, was it?
Spicer warehouse.
Spicer?
It's at the time of the board hearing, I was living there with an occupancy permit from the city, so that statement is a complete error.
Well, they said the photos show the property was far from being habitable. Why would you be calling as a reference, checking the previous landlord of somebody if this person can't possibly live there soon? I mean, that doesn't, isn't that their point? That
it wasn't, like I said before my deposition, it wasn't that I was going to rely on their statements for any type of reference. It was purely for placating of Ms. Cantrell's fear. I realized that was somewhat of a misrepresentation, and I did not know if I was acting as a tester or not, and I've said that all along. However, if my actions fall within the purview of KFS, I feel like I should have the right to say that.
Somebody and not represent that they're a lawyer and try to get information for a complaint that's being filed, that's not a violation of the code, is that?
Well, no, I didn't say that because I didn't know that.
But the board concluded that that was the fact. I just want to make sure if I understand what your concept of the code is. You that would be a violation.
Yes, that would be a violation if I had knowledge and was actually gathering information for that purpose. Without telling them, and it didn't have civil rights applications. And in this case, it did. Mr. King testified in his deposition that there were several places that he knew that there were civil rights questions involved.
I guess I'm having trouble. Maybe the board had the same problem. Linking up your representation that you did this just to assuage Ms. Cantrell when the bar says that the statements of Ms. Vogel appeared in the complaint that was filed. Why would I don't understand that? I can't make that up.
I have no control over what Mr. King did after he left. After he left the office, he was there in the office when the call was made. We didn't.
Okay, your point is that you made the call at his request, and there seems to be a different opinion on that. He says that you were seen to make the call, and that you did it just to satisfy her, and that he did something with the information that you didn't know about. That's essentially your argument.
That's what happened. The board's report of findings of fact obviously doesn't adhere to what the testimony was in that matter. like to emphasize that it was an isolated incident that happened one day, and from the very beginning, and all my correspondence, and my answer about the charges, and my letter following the complaint, I apologize for any inconvenience I caused anybody. I don't feel that I caused anybody any economic harm. It was never my intention to do so. If in fact the taking of the telephone call was wrong, I was under the impression that taping of a conversation in the state of Ohio with the consent of one party was absolutely legal and yeah, I apologize if that's a violation. I had no idea. And I would like to also say that I volunteered to be a tester, not a state rep, but a test case for taking telephone calls and on the board. I didn't anticipate them receiving their reputation and that the suspension would lie. I found that to be unprecedented by the disciplinary cases that I've read that have been brought together by the Supreme Court. And comparatively speaking, I don't feel that I warrant such a harsh punishment. And I've compared my activity to and what the board accused me of and has found in this report two different disciplinary cases. And mine's definitely not a pattern of consistent activity from one day. I did not submit anything to a court. I did not intend to submit anything to a court. If it was such a misrepresentation that would fall within the realm of filing a disciplinary rule, I am sincerely sorry once again, and I would assume that you would have ruled the court.
Thank you, Mr. Pope. Ms. Davis.
Relator and the board found that by clear and convincing evidence, Mr. Pope's explanation of his conduct was not credible. The board found that respondents' joint and independent explanations proffered for their motives and their actions were internally inconsistent and contradictory with each other, evasive, and simply not credible. Mr. Pope has never explained why it is that he admits that he would never have rented to someone with children, and yet Ms. Cantrell had her baby with her in the office that day, which is admitted by everybody else who was present, including Respondent King. Mr. Pope, I am sure today, in his memory, 2.5 years later, recalls it as he has told this court. But he forgets that in March of 1996, when he allowed himself to become a witness in Mr. King's case against University Area Rentals, he testified on page 11 of that transcript, which is Exhibit 4 to Respondent King's deposition in this case, that before those telephone calls were made, quote, Ms. Cantrell's case came up. In March of 1996, on page 15 of that deposition, he testified in answer to the question, what was the intent of the call? Answer, basically, to see if there were going to be any slanderous statements made. That was Mr. Poe's testimony several months after the incident. Even if we accept everything that Mr. Poe says, by the time of the second telephone call, it seems clear that he was aware that Mr. King was adding, who was representing Ms. Cantrell, was adding this claim for the slanderous remarks on the tape that he got from Mr. Pope to a complaint he was going to file that day. Mr. Pope notarized an affidavit in support of that complaint before it was filed.
He did not. I ask you, Ms. Davis, if that's all true, and Mr. Pope still tells the court story that doesn't seem to match up, that doesn't seem credible, Should there be a suspended suspension, a stay suspension for him?
Your Honor, despite perhaps the memory problems or
These aren't memory problems. If there's a credibility issue, this is not a memory problem. If he's not telling the truth, you can't have memory problem on this wide divergence of facts. I would say you can, but it's pretty difficult to sell that to us, I think.
Well,
either it happened the way the board says it happened, or the panel says it happened, or it happened the way Mr. Pope says it happened, and I can understand why the panel thinks it happened the way it did.
He said,
I think the answer is that it is for that reason, for the lack of persuasiveness of what Respondent Pope has said, that the board found that the allegations of misconduct and the violation of the DRs was proven. Then the question of a sanction, it is because of that lack of candor that we later had not suggested just a public reprimand or even a 6-month stay suspension, but a 1-year stay suspension. And Relator would accept any conditions this court would want to put on that. However, given that like Respondent King, there is no previous or subsequent deceit.
But I don't see, again, assuming that the board is correct, I don't see any remorse. I don't see any acknowledgement that he's done something wrong. He's still telling us the same story, and he wants us to believe it. If we don't believe him, then we believe that he's misrepresenting to us directly here at the court. And should that be a stay suspension? Should he sit out for some period of time so that he understands that you don't lie? You don't make up stories?
I think that may be what the panel was reacting to when they refer to non-cooperation, because otherwise Respondent had cooperated fully with the process. I think that's a tough question to answer, and I think the best answer is that Relator accepts that there is remorse, that Mr. Pope very much regrets that he did what he did that day. He appreciates that he crossed the line. To use his own example, he wasn't going 55. The board found he was going more like 100. And that he won't do it again. His desire to exonerate himself, and perhaps there were dual motives in his mind. Perhaps he didn't think through very clearly what he was doing at the time. And yet he has not, to the panel or to this court, completely confessed. But I don't think that we should enhance the sanction for misconduct so extremely as the board in this case did.
Well,
because an attorney does not fully confess to the charges brought against him.
There's a wide gap between an indefinite suspension and a stayed suspension. As you know, we have lots of options in between. And my question is, if he continues to maintain the story that the board found not credible, no remorse. I mean, at least Mr. King had some remorse and said, in effect, I was doing this testing. I don't hear that from Mr. Pope. So I guess I'm wondering.
Well, I think I do hear remorse.
I do too.
There's a difference perhaps in what you believe. He believes in what you believe. The other shows what I think I hear remorse. You're telling us you believe he is remorse. We believe that. And just as aware, Mr. Pope is true when he says that from the time he initially very promptly responded to the complaint filed in this matter, through meetings with me as part of the investigative team, through the discovery process and the hearing, he had apologized for the conduct. He had maintained in the course of this action that he believed that he was not necessarily engaging in unethical conduct, but he has apologized, and I believe that that does reflect remorse that makes the suspension 1 year appropriate.
I heard the apology for the conduct, and I appreciate that. But the question is, what was the conduct for which he's apologizing? There's a difference of opinion on what it is he's apologizing for. And that's my point. I heard the apology, sure. It's good to hear. But I don't hear him apologizing for what it is the board said he did wrong.
For what it's worth, I believe that today Mr. Pope recalled the incident this way and believes fairly firmly that it happened as it did. I think that the evidence does not support his current belief about what occurred, and the board was right when they found that. I just want to make a quick mention, the subject of tape recording and whether or not it's ethical in Ohio has been treated in briefs, but we believe that the ADA opinion of 1974, which this court has never taken a position on, certainly gave attorneys a reason to know that if they engaged in surreptitious taping, particularly under circumstances like these, that they may be at risk of engaging in unethical conduct. We are not trying to say that there is an ex post facto application of the 1997 opinion in the state. What we are saying is that the after tape recording added to the circumstances surrounding the behavior of the respondents and supports the board's conclusion about what the true intent and motivation was. Finally, Mr. Pope has suggested in his brief and just in his argument that somehow his conduct might have been of a personal nature, not wedded with that of Attorney King, and not related to the practice of law. And while there certainly are some actions that all of us could take that would be personal and private and not reached by the disciplinary rules, the mayor feels very strongly that that is not the case with the circumstances before us. And that respondent Pope specifically, after knowing that this complaint was filed, could have done many things. He could have told Mr. King, I'm not a party to this, I didn't know what you were going to do with this tape, and I'm not going to participate in this. He could have told the landlord that. He could have come to the bar and asked for guidance on how to proceed if he really did believe that his words were going to be used in ways that he did not intend. He didn't do that. We think that shows not only that the court was correct in its findings, but that we're dealing with conduct that relates significantly to Mr. Pope's practice of law. Finally, we think that the conduct was inappropriate, deceptive, and violates the DR set forth in the complaint. That the sanction, however, of 1 year suspended, with whatever conditions this court deems appropriate, is the appropriate sanction as opposed to that which is recommended by the board.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you.
Hope you've saved about 2 minutes of your time.
I guess I failed to mention that in reviewing the reply that the Bar Association prepared, I went through my stipulated facts because I had misplaced the copy of my deposition that the realtor took, and I found it to be missing several pages of my deposition, and I would like the court to review my deposition and that. I really do understand the need for the court to obtain an apology, and I apologize for the conduct. I do say that it wasn't as nefarious and malicious as the court's report would imply. I stood here and tried to explain my conduct and why I did what I did, not as a way to deny responsibility for that conduct or to sidestep the disciplinary process, but to explain that I feel that the court held me in a rather harsh light in front of the court, and I was trying to soften that light somewhat by explaining what my recollection of the actual events were. And I really want to reiterate my apologies and my my complete and total remittance to the court. And I
Case submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion in the market, please, in court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, this open session. Call Supreme Court.